room, brother.
Okay.
Blog Talk Radio.
Reverend Edward Pinckney, the only pastor in the history of the Bible to ever be sent to prison for quoting the Bible. But I'm happy today. As usual, we had a tremendous week this week dealing with the people. I tell you, we had an opportunity this week that was so incredible that, I mean, people are saying that Pinckney can do it all. But the truth of the matter is the people who have taken a stand. I'm telling you, I'm excited today because I get a chance to get 3 to 4 to 5 different calls from across the country telling me that they are in on board for the boycott of Whirlpool products. And they give me a good report on things they have done to help us try to get this thing spreading not only across the country, but also across the world. Any place where they're selling Whirlpool products. But I'm excited this day. We're going to have my dear brother General Baker on, and we're going to talk about the receivership of Benton Harbor with the governor in the process of attempting to take over our beautiful city. I don't know whether you call it beautiful or not, but it's beautiful to me. We got beautiful lakefront land. Let me bring in my brother, my dear brother, a man who I love dearly, a man who I'll go back to back with anybody in the nation. And I love him very much. Larry Pinckney, are you there?
I am. How are you, my brother? And it's right back at you.
And I am wonderful and wonderful and wonderful again. I tell you, it's been such another tremendous week. And it seemed like all these weeks, I don't know what's causing this. But I do tell you this. We are experiencing something that nobody probably in the history of mankind ever experienced before. It's like Black Wall Street up there in Tulsa, Oklahoma, when that happened, how Whirlpool trying to come in here. And what they're doing, they're slaughtering the people here. They're taking everything they have, and then what they try to do, they plan on kicking us out. And then here's the deal, too. On last week, there was a vicious attack on the Nation of Islam, and also Marcus Muhammad, who is a very, very close friend of mine. And I tell you, it was something that you never believe of. And yesterday at our meeting, the person that did the attack on Marcus was there. Actually, he's a member of the NAACP, so we had a pretty good meeting yesterday. And what we did, we showed the world that we're capable of doing things that's so incredible that people are still talking about the things that we are doing right now. I tell you, I'm happy today, and I just want to say we're staying busy, and we have continued to punish Whirlpool on that level. But we got a big meeting Wednesday in Lansing, and I plan to be there. Ralph, are you there?
You know, hello. I'm here, listening to every word and loving it.
Yes, and I just want to say, how you doing today, Ralph?
Well, you know, Michael, we're progressing because I think. I can't say that we've had the progress that you have or the success you have, but one mark of success is that the various groups who are dissatisfied with the government have attempted to come together, and I was asked to chair a meeting between libertarians and Arcanists.
Okay.
And although there was no coming together, there was a reality that coming together had to happen somewhere down the pike soon, in order to deal with this system.
And let me ask you a question: Were both those groups at the table?
Yes, they were.
Well, then that's a start right there.
That's a start.
That's a start right there. But Ralph, before we go on, we do have our General Baker, but Larry
yes,
is my brother, former Black Panther Party member. I know Ralph, just between me and you, they kicked Larry out of the Black Panther Party, and he don't want to tell us. So we know how that worked. I'm just teasing you, Larry.
Yeah.
I know, I'm just teasing, but you're my man. And we know we love you. But General Baker, are you there?
Yeah. Can you hear me?
I can hear you quite well, General. How you doing today?
Hey, I'm doing okay.
Sounds like a winner. I have my brother Larry Pinckney on the line, and also that round corner. Larry, say hi to General.
Brother, it is so good to hear your voice. General, it is good to hear your voice. I've been just anxiously awaiting for you to be back on the program.
Okay, Larry, the pleasure is mine, man. We got to get together someday and sit down and kick it.
Yes, I'm looking forward to it.
All right, right on with the right on. And Ralph, hey, General.
I want to say hello to Ralph, too.
Ralph, you here, General?
I feel that I know you after listening to reading Larry Pinckney's email. So I was wondering if Larry could give the reader, the listeners out there a preview again of who you are.
That's fine with me.
Well,
I would quite frankly prefer for the general to do it himself, because if I start, I won't stop. So, brother, you go ahead, let our listeners know.
You go right ahead, General. You the man.
Well, okay, I just got a history of struggle coming out of the 60s, fighting around the anti-war struggles. I was one of the first African-Americans to refuse inductions into the Vietnam War.
All right.
And we went through a long struggle with that, with a letter to the draft board explaining my position. Essentially was that I believed in fighting. I wasn't a conscientious objector. I believed in fighting. I believed in dying, but not in that war. But when you call me for a war of liberation, a war to liberate and free South Africa, free Latin America, free Asia, free Mississippi and Alabama here at home, free 12th Street here in Detroit, call for me. And I'm first in line. So that was kind of my entry into the movement of the 60s. Then we went on and organized factory workers in that era, in that period of time. Black factory workers fighting for equity inside the shops. So that was my contribution to the movement in general. And I'm still here fighting every day. I'm doing everything I can to support Reverend Pinckney up there in Benton Harbor. You know, we're battling now as a retired auto worker, fighting for single payer health care. Irregardless of what the government passes, we're still in the battle and in the trenches for single payer. And that's the effort that I'm putting forth at this period of time.
General, tell us the story about when you go to get inducted and what happened.
Let me say this. What happened, I was drafted, or my induction date was September the 10th. 1965. And so what we had built a movement called the September the 10th movement that was in honor of my induction date. This is 1965. Now, we had developed our struggle around one particular slogan, and that slogan was destroy the draft.
Mm-hmm.
We had rallied people all over the city. We had leafleted at all the high schools, colleges, all the factories in the city. And we were praying for a great big mass mobilization at the Fort Wayne Induction Center here in Detroit on Jefferson Avenue. What happened, you got to remember a couple of critical things happened. On August the 5th, about a month before my induction date, was the anniversary of the Watts Rebellion.
Uh-huh.
Rebellion broke out in Watts, California. That was the largest social upheaval since the Civil War, that lasted for about a week's time, arrested numerous people, but it marked a new entree and a new level of confrontation taking place between the black community and the police departments across the country. So what happened was that we were distributing literature one day. We used to go around posting literature up on empty buildings and walls. And back in those days, we used to use a mixture of pet milk and oatmeal. And that pet milk and oatmeal, man, when you put it on the back of a flyer and rub it up on a building, it'll stay up there forever. That's some of the best glue you can have.
Yeah.
We were posting throughout the city, and the Detroit Police Department pulled us over and threw us in the backseat of the car and said we were under arrest. So they taken us to the police station, and one of the guys, or three of us, one of the guys asked him, he said, what are we being arrested for? And this police officer said, criminal anarchy, rebellion against the government. I said, oh, man, we never heard of such a charge as that.
Yeah.
But anyway, when we got to the police department, all they could do was hold us on an unauthorized posting, which was nothing but a traffic ticket. So we paid the bond and got out the next day. But we think what happened was the police department had tipped their hand. So we went down and talked to some attorneys to find out just what would constitute criminal anarchy. And the attorneys told us we had to be careful about the slogans and things that we use. So we said, well, we don't have to worry about that. We got one slogan. That slogan is destroy the draft.
Yeah.
Don't pay for a brainwash. Okay, so we then went and found out where the federal properties began and where they ended on Jefferson Avenue at the Fort Wayne Induction Center, and we went on and prepared our demonstration. We had got tipped off that they had planned to arrest all the new leaders that came to that demonstration. They were going to try to play up new names, not the old names, not my name and a few others that had been arrested a few times earlier. So what happened was that morning, we got to the induction center, and I went in to be inducted. Our strategy was for me to go in past that physical, because I didn't want them to claim that I didn't go because I was lame.
Mm-hmm.
So we passed the physical, and we got to where we swore in at. I said, I'm not going any further. Don't touch me. I'm not submitting myself to no military authority. And if you don't like what I'm doing, you better call the police. So what they did, they took me into the back to Captain Cox's office. I'll never forget his name. And we sat down. He tried to act like he wanted to interview, asked me what I thought of the war. I said, you know what I thought of the war. I wrote you a letter about it.
Yeah.
So anyway, they turned me off and sent me back, declared our security risk. Well, I went outside, and we waited around. Our strategy was to have a small demonstration downtown, even though our leaflet had called for 50,000 angry blacks, you know, to confront the government on Jefferson Avenue. But we had tactically decided, we put out leaflets asking many people to stay back home, and if the people in the September the 10th movement are attacked, you know just what to do. Remember Los Angeles.
Oh,
and that was our cry. So what happened, we ended up having about 9 people in a demonstration. We picketed the place and left and went on back home, and we threw them off track altogether. They had mobilized 50 special riot rangers and had sent them to Selfridge Air Force Base. They had a command post set up. The operation was called Operation Steve Hill. They had canceled all the military leaves from the Fort Wayne military base. All that in preparation for this big thing, and we ended up with 9 demonstrators and back home before 4 o'clock in the evening.
that
we used that day that worked out to be so successful. You know, and now Rev Pinckney, Larry and Ralph, you know, I got the old police files on all this stuff so you can actually read it.
Yeah.
You know, matter of fact, I wouldn't know some of the details if it don't be for the police files they kept. Because they documented it and we didn't.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, that's the story of that draft induction, Reverend Pinckney.
Oh, you know, that is really exciting. I know when you talked about, you know, we planned on having that tremendous gathering and only 9 people showed up. I kind of like know that feeling, you know.
All right. Okay, that's good.
Yeah. So that
you realize is that there were so many of us across the country with the same thoughts in mind.
Mm-hmm.
And I did the same thing you did very quickly. While I was in college, I had deferments. When I got out of college, I got deferments. When my deferments ran out, I just didn't show up. This was during the Korean conflict because my sentiments were the same. I will fight liberation right here. This is my struggle, and I don't need to go, you know, 5,000 miles away to divide up another country. You know, Northern Ireland, Southern Ireland, North Korea, South Korea, North Vietnam, South Vietnam. I don't need that. And I'm not going to do it. And my family, although not political in the outspoken way, I said, I'm not going. and you haven't seen me. And I saw my father, my sisters and brothers, and to the person, they all, you know, complied. When the military police came looking, I haven't seen them. I might have been eating dinner. Or just, and this was the way it went, because they understood my reaction to go in someplace else, supposedly fighting for democracy, and we didn't have it here. My battle was to go south and deal with those southern sheriffs, like Sheriff Rainey, who had tagged of killing 22 black men. He didn't need a judge, a jury, or anything else. He just shot and bragged about it and was honored by police departments throughout the country. New Jersey in particular brought him here to be honored. And the governor of New Jersey said the state troopers could honor who they wanted, but they couldn't do it in uniform. So he came here and was honored. And I'm saying, I'm to go fight to defend that. And anybody who does, I think, is a fool. If you So, you know, and I realize you have that sentiment. I had that sentiment. Many brothers I've since then had the same sentiment and said, no. And, you know, and I, hell no, I ain't going to go.
End Certainly.
And if we had more of that understanding today, we wouldn't be in Afghanistan and Iraq kicking down people's doors the way our army of occupation called the police kicked down our doors.
Absolutely.
You know what? If we had that understanding today, we probably wouldn't be in this compromised position that we're in today.
That's true.
Because somebody has to do something. And I tell it's amazing. Even, you know, Larry himself, when he was in Oakland, California, And that was in the 60s, too. He also was part of some. But here's what I did. I know I was, they classified me as being 4A. And that's because I was in school. But I don't think it made a difference one way or the other. And General, I don't know whether I've been as bold as you are or as bold as you, Ralph. But I tell you one thing. I don't believe I would have went. I can't see myself going, even though my brother went. And I thought to me that was the craziest thing I ever seen in my life. And he wanted to go, and you know, and like I told him, I can't support anything like that. I said, you know, I love you, but to me, it's just not right.
I understand.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Well, let me just interject you, if I may, real quick, since we're sharing these stories.
Yeah.
General, you're gonna love this.
Okay.
I was while I was in the party. I was sectionally here in the Black Panther Party. While I was in the party, I was also heading an organization called the Black National Draft Resistance League. And, you know, if you just Google it, it'll come up, Black National Draft Resistance League.
Okay.
And anyway, you're going to love this, brother.
Okay.
Who do you think they sent the draft notice to? They sent the draft notice to me over and over. And they knew full well what my position was, on the war, et cetera, et cetera. And your position and mine were exactly the same. I said, oh, we going to fight a war, all right, but it's going to be right here. Okay?
Right.
So here I am at work one day, and the Fed showed up. Two FBI agents showed up. And they said, are you Larry Pinkney? Well, I couldn't very well deny it.
No.
I said, well, yeah. They said, well, okay, we're FBI. Yeah, I said, okay, I'm impressed. Okay.
Yeah.
And they said, we're going to personally give you your draft notice. I said, well, I'll be. Well, such service. Thank you so much. Right? Now, they said, Mr. Pinkney, you have a choice. They said, we will arrest you right now unless you promise to show up to your draft board. And I said, well, it would be unthinkable for me not to show up to my draft board. But what I didn't tell them, of course, was I was going to take six Panthers with me, and that I was in my draft board was in L.A. on Wilshire Boulevard, right? I had 2 weeks. They said, now you've given us your word. I said, well, it's a trip. Y'all accept my word. So I showed up. Okay, and with some other comrade brothers, and we all went in there, and we started trying to recruit people into the party. They could not get me out of there fast enough.
Wow, that's beautiful.
They could not get me out of there fast enough, General. I had a full bird colonel, you know.
Oh,
full bird is a full bird yeah. came up to me. Pinckney. He said, son, I said, I'm not your son.
Uh-huh.
Don't ever call me your son. He said, well, you are dismissed. You may
yeah.
leave. I said, you kidding? After
yeah.
all this happened, what do you mean I'm dismissed? But, you know, it's there were, as Reverend Pinckney said, as Ralph said,
yeah.
as you said, there were so
yeah.
many of us who
yeah.
had the same mentality, who were about resisting and the struggle, and we need that back today.
Yes, absolutely. Hey, General, what do you think that we could do now to get this thing moving just a little bit forward? And also, before we go there, tell us
yeah.
about what you're doing now and some of the things you did after that. There was a group called Drum. Was you part
yeah.
of that also?
Yeah. The Drum movement was the movement in the factories in the 60s.
Mm-hmm.
What happened, we started organizing, you know, at the factory gates around Pinckney. And one of the things that helped us learn how to develop that tactic was during the Detroit Rebellion in 67,
mm-hmm.
When they put the city under curfew, if you got sick, you couldn't go to the hospital. If you got hungry, you couldn't go get no food. But if you had a badge from Ford, Chrysler, or General Motors, you could get through the police line, the state trooper line, the National Guard line, and let you get to work. So coming out of the rebellion, when we sit back analyzing things, we made an assessment that the only place that black people had any value in society was at the point of production.
Mm.
So we decided that we were going to take our efforts to the factory gates and use that to organize factory workers in the city of Detroit. So now I was working particularly at the Dodge main plant, which was one of Chrysler's plants. Now, you got to remember, those plants in the 60s were a lot different than the ones today.
Mm-hmm.
The Dodge main plant had 10,000 employees in that one plant. We probably about 7,000 of those employees were black workers.
Okay.
We began the organization. We developed a little newsletter that would come out once a week because the plant was so big that when something happened on one end of the plant, by the time the story got to the other end of the plant, it had changed two or three times.
Yes.
We came up with the estimate that what we needed was to do a newsletter that could keep us all united on the same issues that we need to address inside this factory. So what happened was we developed an organization called Drum. It was only about nine of us in this organization when we first started. And we developed after a wildcat strike that took place at that plant, in which I was discharged. So I was fired before we organized the first unit. But
yeah.
I had the free time to try to help doing the articles and get the leaflets out. We began to pass out leaflets every week. We would meet on Sunday, prepare our leaflets for the week. We would distribute them on Tuesday. After our first attempt to distribute them, we found out that they would send the security guards out and take photographs of the workers that were passing out the flyers. And they would use that to arrest them once they went in the plant.
Mm.
So the high school kids came up to us and offered to help us. They said, listen, we will do the distribution for you. So every Tuesday, we pick up this group of high school kids, go out to the plant, and distribute the flyers. And that's the method we used to begin to organize.
Mm.
The organizing was so ripe and so rapid that within 9 weeks, these workers started demanding that we do something, that we take some kind of action, that we'd been talking long enough. So we decided that we'd have to try to meet with the executive board at the union, give them some demands. If they don't move on them, we'll move to strike.
Mm.
So what happened was that we had the meeting at the executive board. We took about 200 workers down to the union hall. The executive board refused to move on the issues, and we got up and left, and one of our guys called for a strike the next morning. So what happened was that the next morning, we gathered our people together. We had a little coffee shop then where we had guys that played the conga drums most of the night. And we picked up the guys with the conga drums and and two van loads of people, and we went out and we set up picket lines at the gates. And in about a half hour's time, we had about 4,000 black workers on the streets in Hamtramck that refused to go into work, and the strike was on.
Wow.
That's what began our movement, our drum movement. We struck that plant, and the Chrysler Corporation declared the strike to be extra legal instead of illegal.
Mm-hmm.
And nobody was
General,
yeah. Yeah.
Was Glanton working with you all at that time in drum?
Yeah, Glanton was working with us right at that time. All that time, Glanton was working with us.
Mm.
You know, helping with the distribution of our literature, helping with the meetings and the developing of the leaflet stuff. Yeah, Glanton was working right there with us all the time.
This struggle of yours resounded, the struggle of drum resounded around this country, you know, in the union movement and outside of it. We in New York were very aware of it, and we said, gee, we have to model ourselves after that and do work like that.
I see. Okay. All right. Okay.
And remember this too, General.
Uh-huh.
What y'all did, what the union did, what drum did during that period of time, echoed all across the country. That was tremendous, I tell you.
Yeah. Okay. All right.
What we realized.
So, you know, the beat goes on. You know, I know that. We knew about some of the struggles. We knew the guy in New Jersey, the Mau Wau black brothers at the Mau Wau plant. We knew about the CTA workers in Chicago. We knew about the NUMMI bus drivers in San Francisco. Workplace, you know, the garbage workers in Memphis, you know, that movement that hit the workplace in the 60s was a powerful movement. And we were able to get some concessions from them in that period of time.
Mm. Interesting. Hey, you know that guy who led that garbage strike, the union guy?
Uh-huh.
I met him when I was in Florida just recently.
Oh, okay. All right.
Hey, matter of fact, he was there at the Samuel DeWitt conference when I was speaking. Matter of fact, they honored him for his work that he had done. And he was excited, just as excited as we was, because
I understand
his
right.
idea that, you know, like when I talked to you, you know, it was like, you know, it was so amazing. And then I listened to what he had to say, and I tell you, the movement, I believe in my heart, we got people just like this today, but we got to go find them.
We got to find them.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well, it's interesting, you know, the parallels here. Now, just March 4th out in California, you know what happened there. The students, the unemployed, the immigrants, everybody got together in spite of the unions.
That's right.
Unions,
that's right.
You know, corporate unions, and I guess you guys know all about this out of Detroit when the collapse with the unions and unions and management were together. And when
that's
we had
right.
our struggle against the union in New York City, it was all of the unions joined against the black community, the police union, the newspaper delivery, the food delivery. It was time to separate ourselves from the union, although the left wasn't able to do that. But I guess when it becomes white students involved with a 33% increase in tuition, they were able to say, all right, then we fight the unions. So I guess it was the black students and then the time. We couldn't do it in New York. Now people understand the need to do away with corporate unions when it deals with white people. And I think this economic downturn is a lot of people. And if we take advantage of it, and I'm just listening, and I'm saying, the brothers out there are thinking the same thing, that, you know, all around the country. And I do believe that we can something like that together if we put our minds to it.
We certainly can. We certainly can.
We got to kick Whirlpool's butt.
That's right. And, you know, really, hey, Larry, now listen, now you know how I feel when it comes to bringing people together. I don't care whether they're black, white, blue, purple, whatever.
We
all should be able to come together and stand up and fight for what is right. Because we got a real monster here. And we need to pull this thing together. And I tell you, General, your struggle has been so tremendous and have inspired me. I tell you.
Yes. All right. Well, you guys have inspired us. I had a You know, last Monday's meeting we had a bunch of petitions around the Maytag and Whirlpool closings.
Yeah.
And we had everybody at our gathering filling out those.
All right.
Those have come here. Matter of fact, at our retiree chapters, we're filling out those petitions all over the city, sending them in,
mm-hmm.
you know, around protesting that Whirlpool closing. Was
yes.
that down in Indiana?
That's where it is, in Indiana, Evansville.
Yeah, so that one's on the way. We're really rallying. We're using that as a rallying center here for some of the work we're doing.
Oh, that's wonderful. Me and Larry Pinkney, we plan on going down there and speaking at some of their rallies. They spoke to me. Uh-huh. Absolutely.
That's right.
Go ahead, brother. Go ahead.
No, brother Larry. Go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say that the class nature of this in terms of union, you know, what we have, we don't really have, and you know this better than all of us, that what we now have is we have, you know, essentially corporate leadership of the unions. But the rank and file of the unions have been sold out, just as black people across the board have been sold out. And, you know, I think that what we did in those days parallels what we need to do today. I have a piece in Black Commentator called Stop Whining and Start Organizing. Because,
okay, all right, okay.
Yeah, that's the name of the piece, Stop Whining and Start Organizing, because we have been presented with golden opportunities, just like we all did with respect to that vicious war, that draft, okay? It was a golden opportunity, and you did it, Rob did it, Reverend Pinkney did it, I did it, and thousands of other people did it, you know, and we got to take this and turn it around, use it as an opportunity to organize and educate and politicize. So I have great hope, and I'm not talking about that Obama drama nonsense called hope, you know.
Yeah. You know what? Here's something that we all should start. See, we're not talking about the war in Afghanistan enough. I mean, that should be a rally cry for us right now, because reason unknown, people rally around trying to, when it comes to wars, people want to be against the war. So why don't we all find something that we can put our hat on so we can rally more people together and say, we got to be against the war in Afghanistan. We have to be.
Mm-hmm. Interesting thing at this day and age. Here we are celebrating Women's Week in this country.
Yeah.
And then let's back and look at what was the rationale that they gave to the people of the United States as to why they were going to war in Afghanistan. And it was, from their words, to free up, to liberate the women of Afghanistan. So my question with that is, wait a minute, how is this country going to convince me that they're going to go 6,000 miles to liberate some other brown women when we have brown women here that are not liberated? And then they can talk to me about equal pay for equal work for white women. We're still not there here. So now you're going to convince me that you're going over someplace else and fight a war to liberate brown women. No, I do not think so. But the people bought that, and now we have escalated into nobody knows, nobody questions. What are you doing over there? Stopping opium? And I'm going to tell a joke here. They want to bring democracy to Afghanistan, and they did. The same type of American democracy. Bush stole two elections, and then Hamid Karzai steals an election, has a corrupt government like we have corrupt governments and corrupt unions. They took that type of democracy to Afghanistan, but I don't think this is what people understood they were doing.
It's the best democracy that money can buy.
That's it. That's it. Here we got, now think about this now. We got here in the United States where we have over 400 billionaires.
Yeah.
Can you imagine 18 in red Chinese in China.
Yeah.
And then you got, we got the, in Mexico, we got the richest man in the world, Carlos Slim.
Carlos Slim
is the richest man in the world now. And, but check this out. They're saying that the United States is losing their grip on the economy in the world.
Yeah.
Because what they have done is they have centralized the economy to the top. And what happened is they're not capitalists. These are greedy, I don't know what the word, imperialist going.
That's
and
a better word.
The sickness. Yeah. And they are stealing so much that they're stifling the economy. And one of the things I used to say back in the 60s, 45 years ago, don't you understand, when they can't steal from the rest of the world, they're going to steal from us.
That's right.
But they've done, naturally, with capitalism,
that's right,
this is the way it has to go. But who would have thought they would go so far? And if you look at this case of Afghanistan, under the Taliban, there were no drugs. They shut the drug trade down. Now, under the Americans and their so-called Northern Alliance, in Afghanistan, they produce enough heroin to supply 114% of the world demand out of Afghanistan. This is what they brought to Afghanistan. Now, I understand the Afghanis, when they look and see the Americans, 400 multimillionaires, and they're over there with nothing, and they're saying, we can't participate in that world economy. Of course they will. They're going to do the heroin. And I don't know if you're aware of this. A couple of years ago, when some young people, they had an epidemic in Massachusetts where young drug users were dying like flies.
OD, and that is correct.
Heroin was so cheap, and these young kids who did not know the properties of heroin were accustomed to getting a $10 bag, and, you know, like it wasn't much in it. Now the $10 bag is 100% heroin. Well, you got to pick that stuff up. And they didn't know that. And then they had to get public and announce it. Listen, if you're going to use it, and if it's the pure stuff that looks like cocaine, then you must cut it in order to stop having these kids die on the street. And I'm saying, boy, if this isn't chickens coming home to roost.
Mm.
They
telling done you.
Drug trade there, and now the Americans go and open it back up in, under the guise of protecting women's rights and under the guise of taking democracy, and we all know what they're doing over there. It has nothing to do with women's rights. It has nothing to do with democracy. It has to do with taking over that land and using it the way they want with a pipeline through it, and they don't want the people of Afghanistan bargaining on a fair and even basis. They want
absolutely.
Just like they took the oil from Iran when what was that, Mogadishu the Iranian king there said he wanted, I believe it was 11 cents on a dollar, and they says, no, it was 9. They killed him and put the Shah in a caretaker government.
Yeah.
And this is the MO of America all around the world. People are getting tired of it. Now they're taking from us.
And that's it.
And they are. That's it.
Our leftist, so-called leftist organization, our poor people, our oppressed people, in line, we can stop this.
That's right. And you're thinking of oppressed, Ralph. General, I know that, you know, Highland Park is in receivership, and I know what the that's where I'm going. Wednesday, I'm going to Lansing to deal with the Treasury Department in an attempt to stop this hostile takeover. I don't see it being successful, but I just want them to see my face and let them know I object to it. Tell us a little bit about Highland Park being in receivership. This is Highland Park, Michigan.
Highland Park went into receivership almost 6 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
They sent that was even under Engler. They sent the financial manager in to seize control of the city. And when that financial manager came in, you know, the financial manager from the Treasury Department takes over everything. Matter of fact, they told the city council and the mayor that they can make any decision they want that don't cost no money. Well, it ain't no decision that you can make that don't cost no money.
That's right.
You can't even meet somebody. You can't even meet unless somebody pays for the heat the light in the building that you're meeting in, unless you meet outside in the yard. So they took the complete authority of the city
They closed the library. They closed down the recreation center. They sold the Y's to the rescue mission. They even closed the police department and the jail.
Oh.
And moved the police department to a temporary trailer behind the shopping center.
Oh.
And they moved out of the jail so fast that they forgot to take the property out of the property room. And they came back 2 months later, and homeless people had broke in the old jail and was selling the guns and smoking up all the crack. They left in the...
Yeah,
abandonment of the city is so rapid and so fast and so complete, man, they just left everything.
Wow.
They closed City Hall. They put a slot in the door. They laid off all the employees except one person in City Hall. And they left a slot in the door for you to drop in your property taxes and your water bill.
Mm.
I'm telling you, these financial managers, when they come in, they strip the city bare. That city manager we had was robbing the city blind.
Wow.
Come to find out after we got her switched that she had wasted almost $3 million of Highland Park's money by paying consultants to run this, consultants to do that. She hired another manager that was paying them $140,000 a year to our little city that didn't have any money.
Wow.
See, there's no accountability over the financial manager.
Mm-hmm.
The Treasury Department doesn't offer any oversight.
Yeah.
Now, we confront it with the same problem with the Detroit City School Board. The Detroit City School Board is under the financial manager.
Mm-hmm.
They sent in this guy, Bullet Bob, under the Treasury Department.
One of Granholm's buddies.
Yeah, see, the way the Act 72 reads, that any economic entity that goes, that becomes, the books become imbalanced, they can take it over through the Treasury Department.
Mm.
And then that Treasury Department doesn't have any oversight over it at all, and they just run rampant and do what they want to do. You know, so it's really bad news working under these financial managers that they sent in.
Let me ask you another question right fast. You said they closed down the library?
And the library is still boarded up.
And the jail, too?
They closed the jail and the police department.
Wow.
They got the department working out of I don't know why they closed it, because it was too expensive to run. Now, whenever anybody's arrested in Island Park, they got to transfer them down to the county jail. We don't even have a jail in Island Park any longer.
Wow.
So, I mean, when they come in with this financial malfeasance, man, it's really a drastic action that they
mm-hmm.
take.
And, you know, Benton Harbor, we got this lakefront land. This is, and we got this high school sitting right on the lake. And I've been telling folks, the high school is gone once they come in. And I know that Granholm is coming in. I know she's going to do whatever she can to make sure that we lose everything of value here. The water department, we talking about the high school. We talking about all the lakefront land. We talking about still leasing that land to Whirlpool. They're going to sell it for even less than what they're getting for leasing it. And I know all this is about to happen, and that's why I'm fighting so hard to keep them from coming in. And even if they do come in, I'm going to let the governor know that we're not taking this mess from you.
Yeah, I'm telling you. We need to try to exchange information on what happened in Highland Park to you, because they've done the same thing with Ecorse. They've done the same thing with Pontiac. Pontiac is now under the state control. Ecorse under the state control. Detroit City School Board under state control. So as more and more of these cities go under state control, we're going to have to figure out a way to get a network so that we can communicate on what's taking place in each one of these cities.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
It is not
no oversight. No.
This is a template for things to come. They're taking over. They're selling it privately, and as you said, they're selling it for less money than what they're getting now, and it's a corralling of the finances to the very wealthy. We see it
that
trying to sell all the resources, the buildings that they were built in California just 20, 30 years ago. Now they're looking to sell. I think the number is $13 trillion or something. They're looking to sell them for something like $13 billion. They're looking to sell it private interest for $2 billion. Privatization. Where they can make money. They're privatizing water here in Rutland County, north of New York. You don't have to go a long way to see it. And this is their program. And if you're right, if we can get people around the country to see what's coming, you know, this train is roaring down the track. Business, and we have to wake people up to tell them to get off, even though we know and we can step aside. There are many who haven't heard it, and they're going to be trampled. And it's just like the subprime loan, this illegal criminal document of a subprime loan. We find out that 67% of the black people who got them were eligible for prime loans. They stole from people.
And hey, Ralph. And here's the thing about that. If we don't say nothing about it, they don't consider it illegal.
Exactly.
And see, this is why we have to network and talk to each other. We got to make sure that we get a message out there that people can understand. Because a lot of times, the people that really know, sometimes they talk over the head of the people that don't know. And those people don't want to connect with the other people.
That's right.
You know, so that's why we have to do it. That's why we know we have this show, and you know, and I tell you, is you know, I got my brother Larry, Ralph, and General.
Yeah.
You know, it's an honor for you, for me to.
Hey,
anytime I talk to you on the phone, I feel.
Yeah, and you know what, Reverend Pickney, I'm gonna have to sign off. But listen, a little bit early, we got this U.S. Social Forum thing coming to Detroit in June.
Right.
And it would be a good place for us to try to coalesce on some of these various fronts.
Oh, absolutely. General, you know they're coming through Benton Harbor. You know that, right?
They're going to march through Benton Harbor,
they're
too.
Coming through the caravan coming through Benton Harbor, and my goal is to take them to the golf course.
Right.
We're going to set up some stuff so I can take everybody. We're going to the golf course. We know we're going to have I'm planning on having a program here in Benton Harbor.
Fantastic. Okay.
Fantastic.
But Larry and Ralph and Rev Pickney, I got to sign off.
I believe me, I understand,
right.
General. I love you. Tell Marion tell Marion I called Sam and talked to Sam earlier, and I want everybody. And you know how I feel about my folks in Detroit, and you know how I feel about you, General, and Marion and Maureen, the whole gang. Love y'all, and I'll be talking to y'all soon.
Okay.
General.
Get a chance to meet Ralph and Larry.
Well, Ralph coming to the forum.
You got it.
Okay, fantastic.
Yeah.
Okay, great.
And we're going to try to get Larry there.
Okay, great.
Yeah, I'd love to see that.
Okay.
All right, great. Okay.
Take care, General. Appreciate you.
Stay strong, General.
Take care.
Well, here's an interesting thing about the social forum. The leftist forum is being held here in New York the 19th, the 20th, and the 21st.
Uh-huh.
And guess who the keynote speaker is?
You.
Oh, God.
No, Jesse Jackson.
No, not the good. Hey, Ralph. Ralph, Larry, not the good Ralph. Larry, I know you want to say something about the good Ralph now. I know you got something to say. I want you to spit it out because I know the Ralph is your man.
Well,
yeah, I got something to say about him, all right.
I know
the bottom line is that he wouldn't know left. If you pointed him in that direction, how dare these so-called leftists pick, of all people, Jesse, to be their keynote speaker when there are any number of real leftists, what we've got that they're ignoring, because let's be blunt. Ralph and I have talked about this a lot, so of you and me, Reverend Pingney, that you know, the bottom line is they know exactly what they're doing. These people are phony. They're phony progressives and they're fake leftists.
Mm-hmm.
That's how they are. They're
all
fake,
they are,
and phony.
They are,
you know,
Democrats.
And so how dare they even call it the left? As my Chicano former Brown Beret friend, comrade, and brother would say, Eddie Pettis, the left has left.
That's right. They have left the house.
Yeah,
I tell you. But this is really tremendous, you know. And Larry, we're gonna try to figure out a way how we can get you here. And Ralph, we're gonna try to figure out a way how you can get you to come through Benton Harbor. And I really want both y'all to be here when that caravan come here. I'm planning on putting on the program, but they told me it's gonna be from 1,000 to 5,000 people. I don't know how many it's going to be, We probably couldn't accommodate 5,000 folks, but 5,000 people at that golf course will be something really exciting. And here's something that I'm really looking forward to. August the 10th, they're going to have Jack Nicklaus and Arnold Palmer here. So what we want to do, we want to give them a very, very warm reception. And we want to make sure that we want to let them know how much we love them. Mm-hmm. And what I'm going to do now, I'm going to start rallying the troops, getting them together, even the folks that's going to be at the social forum. I'm going to get it, and we're going to set up a place where we're going to have a seminar ourselves at that forum. They want me to have a set up something, and that's what I want to do. I want to set up something, so maybe Larry, Ralph, all three of us. I'm going to see how we're going to work this out, Larry. Well, we're going to get you here.
Yeah,
so that's my goal, to get you there and get you here and see what Mary and them and General can do to help us all out and see what's actually going on. Because if, you know, any stipend that I receive, you know, I'll make sure that it goes towards you coming here. And so that's my goal. So we're trying to get this thing rolling so that, you know, the three T's.
Well,
that's
well,
it.
The ride, I'm going to be there. Count on.
Well, I know you're going to be there, Ralph, but it got to be all three of us.
Right, and we're going to get Larry there.
That's right.
And let me go back to the Jesse Jackson thing. When people would ask me, you know, I visit Lynn every Monday. And after having visited Lynn, I think it was last Monday, I says, what do you think of the Jesse Jackson speaking at the left forum? And she says, what's the matter? They couldn't get Obama? So I tell people, she speaks just as quick. Her mind is sharp. They haven't heard her there, but they have reason. You know, she's incommunicado for 90 days. She can't even call her lawyers.
No.
They have to go in to see her because they want to shut that lift down.
Yeah.
I said to people, I says, you know, they're going to give her the terrorist treatment when she goes to jail.
Mm.
And the reason why they wanted her to go to jail so fast is because they were starting this trial here, this so-called trial of Guantanamo people. Well, you know, Lynn's case is the bedrock of the terrorism drive they have done here. First, you send in an agent to get people's names. He does it all, and he gets to enlist people with talk. And then they find them guilty of the crime the agent has done.
Mm.
And the blind sheikh who Lynn defended said, no, everything that this agent brought up, he was on tape saying, no, this would be bad for Islam.
Mm.
No, you know, find a military target. But what they did in this landmarks case is saying the sheikh should have reported this guy to the FBI, the guy who was working for the FBI. And then we had Judge Mukasey saying, oh, lucky it was the FBI and the brew that they were making could never blow up. What if it wasn't the FBI? If it wasn't the FBI, it wouldn't have been any. They sent the guy in to do it.
That's right.
On that. And see, that's their whole case. So now they have to silence her. They put her away. She makes a cellmate calls me to say for the third time they messed up her medicine. She ends up in a hospital and she's not back. I sound the alarm, and because the cellmate called me, which is against a prison regulation, she gets a 90-day suspension from email and phone calls.
Mm.
Imagine that. Just imagine that. Now, how much sense does that make? That is outrageous. That tells us who the criminals are. They're the criminals. They're the criminals.
And Larry, you're 100% correct. This is how they do to silence you. And what they're doing right now, they're silencing her. And we know it's wrong. But if we don't tell them it's wrong, it's not wrong.
Yeah,
see, the thing that we have to say, we have to flood them with letters and all kinds. Same way, Larry, you did for me when I was locked up. You went beyond the call of duty. You was right there. You was Johnny right on the spot. You called and you did things. Matter of fact, you probably may be more responsible for saving my life than one would ever imagine. But we got to do the same thing. Yes, we got to do the same thing for Lynn. And I have really, really dropped the ball for Lynn, and I really feel terrible about that because I keep saying I'm going to write her, and every single day is always something that I don't get around to writing her, and I know it's wrong, but I'm going to tell you this, Ralph, I want you to listen to me, I want you to hold me this as a man of God, that I'm going to get her out a letter this week, and it's going to be mailed, and that's not a say-so, that's a promise.
I know that all the work you're doing, I understand is no
But time. There's no reason for me not to do that. I owe it to myself to write her.
Let me shout
and
it out.
We're talking about Lynn Stewart, our audience. Lynn Stewart, the people's lawyer who has been imprisoned by this criminal, undemocratic, unconstitutional, so-called government. It's a corporate government. But we're talking about Lynn Stewart, the people's lawyer.
And she housed it. The name Lynne Stewart, Stewart, 150 Park Row, New York, New York, 10007. Her number is 53504-054. Lynn Stewart, 150 Park Row, New York, New York, at MCC, Manhattan Correctional Center. Look it up on lynnstewart.org on your website, or listen to this program again if you can. And thank you so much. And as I say to Larry, he's heard me say it, watch it, because they're putting the truth tellers in jail.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely.
Watch it. They're putting the truth tellers in jail.
Mm.
So be careful. You are a known... Both of you are known truth tellers. They're going to be looking to put you in jail.
Absolutely. And listen, Ralph, do me one favor.
Mm-hmm.
Please send me her address again. And I promise you I'm going to get that out this week. I'm going to make sure that during the... When I talk to you on Sunday, when we do our show on Sunday, I'm going to tell you it has been placed in the mail.
Fantastic.
And I'm going to do it because, first of all, I'm a man of my word. Because if I wasn't a man of my word, I couldn't be a truth teller.
Right on.
You see, so it is done. Consider it done.
And I like today's program. I'm going to say all the other guests you had on were super, but I remember when you said, Larry said drum, I says, oh, yeah. Yeah, we're all of us who have that thought in mind of liberation for our people and the workers know about drum.
Absolutely, absolutely. Listen, we got 2 minutes left. I'm gonna give you these 2 minutes to say whatever your heart desire. But before I do so, I want to give a shout out to my grandson Blake Williams. He met General once before at one of our meetings. And I tell you, Blake Williams, we love you, and we want to make sure that you become a well-known freedom fighter yourself and a truth teller. There's nothing more important than being a truth teller and a truth soldier. And I know that you got it in your blood, so I'm not concerned about anything else. I'm more concerned about you getting the information you need and getting it from the right people. So if you're getting that information from the right people, hey, I know it's right on. If you're not, you need to contact me. You need to call me. That's Blake Allen Williams. Blake Allen Williams. We love you. And take care of yourself. Go ahead, Larry.
Well, in 30 seconds, let me just say that, as always, it's a pleasure, it's an honor, and we've got, you know, being on this program, we've got so much work to do. We beware of the snakes and the bandits. I'm talking about the government. I'm talking about the corporations or the corporate government. Beware, but stay strong, maintain, let's be creative, okay, because we can out-create, we can out-organize, and that's really what it boils down to. I love all my comrade brothers and sisters, black, white, brown, red, yellow. I love you all. Stay strong and maintain.
Mm, very good. And I just want to say to everybody, earlier I mentioned that my dear brother Larry Pinckney was kicked out of the Black Panther Party. That was only a joke. I want y'all to know that. That was a joke, strictly a joke. So don't say a Reverend Pinckney saying that, yeah, that he got killed. No, that was a joke. So take it as a joke. And Ralph, go ahead and clean us up.
Well, this has been a great program. Time flies, and you have done a community, a public, a national service by putting this program on. Because if people cannot listen to these stories and not be moved by them. So thank you so much.
Absolutely. And I'm just going to say to Ralph, I love you. I want you to, if you won't talk to Lynn, but you're going to probably write her, but tell her that I love her and I love her. And Larry, I want you to know that I love you and I love
right,
everything,
you
know, and Caroline, tell her I love her. And to my wife, I'm throwing a shout out to her. Let her know I love her. I love the work that we're doing together. And that, you know, we are focused on her. Her name is Dorothy Pinckney. And you know, and what we want to do, we want to build people who never probably never been a soldier before. We can make them a soldier. All we have to do is keep telling the truth, truth teller. That is the name
right.
of our program, truth telling. And I will talk to the three P's next Sunday. And here's the deal. If any one of y'all have someone you want to come on next Sunday, please let me know.
Will do.
Okay?
Will
and
do.
On that
all right.
note, it's all over but the shouting.
Right.
I will
you,
talk
bro.
To y'all soon and take care. I love y'all and we'll talk some more. But if y'all got somebody y'all want to come on next week, please let me know.
Till next week.
Yes, right. Until next week, goodbye.
See you.
Bye-bye. Mm-hmm.